and here's a look at the Fairbanks weather. Today's high temperature was 15 degrees. And the Home Fires radio program with our host, Patty Kostelic.
Hello, welcome to Fairbanks Home Fires. This is Patty Kostelic. I'm in the studio this evening with Rich Seifert, who is a colorful, witty, congenial expert on winterizing, and Ellen Iote, who's a home economist with the Cooperative Extension Service. We're going to talk about winterizing. In some ways, it seems on the face of it like a sort of boring subject, but actually, I think all of us have to spend a lot of time and effort doing it, or not, and facing the consequences. A lot of people acted very superior to me when I was talking about this topic. And they were acting like, well, this is just something that everybody does. We've got it all together. We don't have any trouble with this. My husband's been here 22 years. We just got our storm windows into our kitchen so I could clean them last week. And, of course, you know, the sort of soot's dripping onto the kitchen floor, and we have this sort of elaborate newspaper thing, and we're out there in the front yard trying to put them up in the snow. And I'm still 2 weeks off the time that my mechanic can get our cars in. And I'm sort of praying and throwing caribous on the wood and doing the real Alaskan thing. I was told that was the Alaskan thing. What do I know? Anyway, I think people, in fact, get very cavalier around here. I myself have to admit to great superstition. If I put the storm windows on in advance of the absolute necessity day, then I'm sort of inviting winter to arrive. Doesn't that seem appropriate?
Well, yes, it's that and things like putting an eye of newt in your radiator to keep the radiator from freezing up. There are many more more common and useful ways of getting the same result. So I don't think keeping the bad karma away is going to keep winter away.
Oh, really?
That hardly ever worked for me. Been here 14 years, and it always seems to come looming right around.
Why are so many people unprepared? Now, I refuse to believe that I'm the only one who isn't.
Oh, no. It's endemic. It's everybody tends to put it off.
Do you have an explanation that's more logical than my sort of superstitious...
I would be more an excuse than an explanation,
procrastination,
I think. Yeah, just simple
procrastination.
People think, oh, it's just not going to snow this weekend yet. I mean, I'm not ready to change my snow tires because...
Okay, I think that's probably the best excuse I can offer for the untimeliness of this program, because when I suggested that we were going to talk about winterization, everyone said, well, it's too late. You know, and I said, well, let's sort of figure out how we could pick up the pieces, because I know, in fact, a lot of people who are not ready for it. So this is a call-in show. We've had some difficulty with the phone, so I'm just going to warn you in advance that we might have. But we aren't the only experts in town. In fact, I've just clearly qualified myself to be a rank amateur. And our number is 474-5044. Rich has other obligations and will be leaving us at 725. So if you have questions for him, please call those in before that time. And if you have knowledge, special knowledge, about how to get ready for winter, or what you should do if you haven't and you think it's too late, or what to do when some of these problems that we're going to discuss do arise, if you have some clever solutions, in keeping with the home fires theme, I wish you would call us at 474-5044, 474-5044, and give us the benefit of your experience and wisdom.
Patty, one of the topics that we're getting lots of calls on already, people not being prepared, is frozen canned goods. They have stored it in their garage or elsewhere. All of a sudden, they froze. And what do they do then? And so this is one of the calls we're getting lots of questions on.
What do we do?
Okay. First of all, don't let them freeze again. And bring them to an area where it's not going to freeze. And perhaps Rich can talk about when it gets down to 50 below, if the outside walls are not insulated well, perhaps you should move those canned goods to another location in your kitchen. If they freeze and when they return, to the original consistency. In other words, when they thought if the can also returns to the original consistency, that it's no longer bulge or no longer a leakage or no leakages along the side seam, then it's safe to eat. But okay. If it's bulged yet after it's thawed out and there's leakage, then you should discard it.
So there may just be a little bit of loss of prime consistency.
Yeah, right. In other words, it may be softer consistency than you want. We accidentally froze some wax beans one time, and they kind of turned to mush, and my family wasn't very excited about eating them. But the food is safe then, but providing you check those things out.
You said think of the starving people in whatever, and you'll eat these mushy beans.
No, my family didn't kind of see it that way. We didn't eat the mushy beans.
They said, we'll wait till March. if we run out, we'll go with the mushy beans. Okay, so it's just a question of aesthetics at this point. If there is no visible leakage.
That's right.
And if the can resumes its normal shape.
Yeah, and it's, that's right. If it's no longer bulged and there's no leakage, then it's fine. Cream soups will tend to separate, but after you heat them, they'll go back into consistency.
I was amazed, actually, the first year up here, I noticed that I had some really cold cans that came out of my cupboards that were in the kitchen. I mean, these were not outside, so those outside walls, if they're not really well insulated, can, in fact...
What about the pipes?
Boy, well, in fact, they what happens freeze. Is the cans being there and other... stuff like, say, a box of Bisquick, something that has a more fibrous consistency to it. Boxes of cereal are very good insulators. They're, in fact, good insulators, so they tend to function as insulation. They cool the inside surface of the... It's like putting on a block of insulation on your wall. So you tend to cool the wall. And if there are things behind that which can be insulated from the heat in the building, why you can actually... freeze something in between the cereal box and the wall.
So the question, so now you heard it here first, folks, put the Bisquick next to the outside
that's
wall.
Right. Well, that's pretty much it. It won't suffer frost damage. It's already dry. Things that are already dry and have a quality which makes them look like insulation or act like insulation should be stored nearest the wall, and anything that doesn't should be kept as in from the wall to keep it protected from freezing.
Very logical. Okay, again, our number is 474-5044, and please call us with your wisdom. If you don't think Bisquick is a good insulator in your cupboards, call us and tell us.
Shredded wheat would be a good one. I think shredded wheat is a better example than Bisquick.
Okay, shredded wheat, 474-5044. Okay. I don't really know any kind of logical, orderly way to proceed here. You are, in fact, the experts, and so I would just...
I wanted to talk a little bit about automobiles because of the great vexations of living in a subarctic world, which we do here, having to function with an automobile every day under all conditions is probably the greatest challenge that everyday people face. And there are so many things that you need to look into. There are so many things that you can forget about. And there are a lot of little things you can do, little amenities that you can provide yourself, which make life so much easier in the event of an emergency or a situation which requires a little extra effort. For instance, a simple carrying of a flashlight in the car can be the difference between an all-night wait for a tow and finding out that you really did break your fan belt and you have one to replace it with in the car anyway. If you don't have a flashlight, you can't see enough to tell whether the fan belt is indeed broken or not, so you don't know. Sometimes you're lucky and someone comes along who has one. Mm-hmm. But it's so easy to do, and there are pocket flashlights now. I would advise you, if you keep one, keep it on your person so that you keep the batteries warm as well, because batteries at 50 below are not very useful, and they tend to go down very quickly in charge.
Mm-hmm.
One of the common things that goes wrong is people don't change lubricants, and the first session of 20 to 30 below will turn their lubricants in their differentials and transmissions to wax. And they won't be able to move, literally. They won't be able to turn the transmission over. Very easy to forget. It's out of sight and whatever, and people change the oil and change the radiator fluids and whatever, but forget to change the differentials. Mm-hmm. And the in four-wheel drive vehicles, there's another small problem that happens, and that sometimes the seals leak, and you do a lot of summer driving through water, and you may actually get water mixed in with the grease in the front differential or the rear differential and the axles in a four-wheel drive vehicle. And if you don't change the grease at the end of the summer, don't change the 70-weight gear oil, you may actually have water in there that freezes in place in the axle when the first freeze comes, and suddenly you will also find that you're literally frozen in place and don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Your axle won't turn. This has happened. I've had water come in. It's especially prevalent with older vehicles, of course, which are a little more leaky. But it's one of those hidden things that you never would have thought of unless you had experience with it before. But it's something to look for.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is you can grease and take care of your manual steering gears. Most people don't think that's something to take care of, but you do. Most people have noticed when it gets cold that the car is much more difficult to steer, and they often think this has to do with the greases in the drive lines or whatever. It can actually have something to do with the grease in the steering box, and you can dilute that with light oils or mystery oil or Conoco DN600 or some of the light oils just to make it easier to turn. So there are a lot of little things that you can do. Of course, just generally have a good tune-up.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest people go to the vehicle emissions analysis program and have their emissions checked, because that's a good indication of how in tune your car is.
They're still in Bentley Mall this week.
That's right.
Okay, Bentley Mall, and they're open from 8 to 7.
I don't know the hours,
I believe some fairly long hours. So that is free, and there's no penalty,
right,
even if your car comes up short.
That's right.
Okay.
Keep a spare with you. I have had people stop in an emergency and check it at least to make sure it's up. One of the things that the rental car agencies do when you go to rent a car is they go back and they check and make sure your spare is up. You should do this regularly, because one of the most discouraging things you can find is to have a flat tire in the middle of the dark, cold winter and find that you not only have a flat, but you have a flat spare as well. Or perhaps you don't have a spare, which would be very unfortunate. Very simple matter, just to check, but a little time in preparation saves a lot of hassle mm-hmm. down the road.
Yeah, at 40 below, even 10 minutes of inconvenience becomes,
that's right,
from here to eternity.
Time is very essential, and anything you can avoid doing then is worth avoiding doing then.
Yeah, and especially for people who travel with small children, I know that's a concern of many of the women I talk to, that if you're going even on a simple errand to the store with a couple of small children and you have a minor car problem, it can be a major,
that's right,
problem. I think sometimes I've noticed that Fairbanks, with our sort of growing shopping center appearance, that we become a little cavalier with the temperatures, that it doesn't seem the sort of primitive outback place that it was, but the fact is we still deal with 40 below temperatures, and a few blocks or a little bit of time can be a serious problem.
I think the greatest temptation is to not put on heavy shoes, thinking that you will be in and out of the car quickly and that there will be no need to ever get cold to any great extent. You won't be exposed very often. And I know many people from Chichaco to Pioneer who have been caught with this situation where pair of very thin street shoes were all they had at 50 below, and they had to walk a mile. And believe me, that can be very enlightening for how fast you can get cold.
I sort of thought about that on Sunday. I was at the symphony, and there's this great dilemma. This is an exciting thing. It has the atmosphere of a special social occasion. People want to look nice occasionally mm-hmm. in Fairbanks in winter, and there's a great thing, people dropping off friends and family at the door, and there's this great shoe change, or or do you just go in with the moon boots and your lovely velvet dress, or
right.
what is the appropriate,
yeah. Yeah, well, I think we're fairly liberal in tolerating all ranges of opportunities, but it certainly tends to be an individual choice in that case.
Okay, so the thing is to keep some snow packs, to keep some really good outdoor boots in your car.
Absolutely.
Even if, in fact, you are just going to Safeway there are a lot of other food stores, but to whatever food store you choose. It seems like a simple operation, but if you get stopped and you're out on the street, it's serious. Ellen's a real expert on that. Do you know, you have any special hints for houses, or do you have some more information to add on cars before we go on?
I guess houses, it's a matter of tending to the obvious things, like you said earlier about storm windows and tightening things up, and making sure your plumbing is secured and well insulated, and your heat tapes, if you have them, all work. There are certain things that are unavoidable that I get calls on annually at specific times. Well, the first major cold snap we have and the first major warm snap after the cold snap are two times when people will notice problems. The cold snap will be condensation problems will be enhanced. You will notice them greatly. Large amount of condensation on windows and whatever. The fact of the matter is, if you have a double pane window and you have a healthful level of humidity in the house, it's almost unavoidable to get condensation, to not get condensation on the windows at that time. If you have a healthful level of humidity, you will get condensation. The only way to avoid it is to shutter the window from the outside or to shutter it from the inside and keep it moisture from getting to it. Some people think there is a way you can avoid it. I don't think there is physically without some shuttering device. So that's something that it's a hard pill to swallow, but that's the fact, and I don't know any other way to do it. We're trying to get a good system where we have an insulated, transparent medium where we don't have to worry about that as much, but it's not available right now.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is when you have a cold snap and then a warm snap, this happened last year after Christmas. We had a very warm spell for about a week, and all the condensation that had gone up in people's roofs and edges of the top plate of the wall and whatever that had condensed out and frozen as ice was now thawing and melting back causing doors to swell up and causing drips and drains, and people thought their roofs were leaking. This is a very common problem if you have condensation. Mm-hmm. It happens normally in the spring, but can happen after any thaw in the middle of winter. So you have all these springtime problems occurring in the middle of winter from condensation problems.
Actually, I'm smiling because we have a sort of Zorba the Greek full human catastrophe. last spring, we had all this incredible dripping from our ceiling, and we were sure that we had a roof leak, and so we had to sort of wait out this whole process till the whole thing ended, and we did put in on a new roof and then totally new ceilings and new insulation. And in fact, in the end, I think that a lot of it was condensation, probably from inadequate insulation between the ceiling and the roof, which allowed heat loss up into the small crawl space. And of course, once you have heat loss, you have glaciation on the roof, which in fact traps moisture. So I hate to constantly use us as a bad example, but I think we had it all last year. Now we've got new everything, so.
Well, the important thing to realize is a lot of people who come to the northern climates as newcomers, first-time visitors, don't understand the importance of vapor control and what a vapor barrier is. It's probably one of the most strategically important elements of a building that we have, because just as it says, it's made to control water vapor migration into insulation, because as soon as, and there's a lot more moisture normally on the inside of a building at a high temperature than there is the outside, so there's a general movement from the inside to the outside. And the only way you can stop this from occurring, because it naturally occurs under a pressure difference, is to put a vapor barrier. And the commonest one is the polyethylene plastic called Visqueen locally.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep that impermeable, to keep that in a complete sheet, especially in the ceiling, to keep moisture from getting up into the roof is a very strategic building plan. And that's one of the details that we really advise people to pay a great deal of attention to when they're building, to maintain that vapor barrier to keep moisture from getting in the walls and deteriorating your insulation and making it not work.
Well, I'm sure Sam would agree with you, because we had a house that had acoustic tiles, no vapor barrier, and 4 inches of insulation, all the worst possible things, and we would not suggest that route.
I'll bet it got quite moist in there at times when it started to melt.
Bucket
spring.
Dripping
yes.
Wet.
Right.
Every pot and pan in the house, you know. And then, of course, there's creosote collection, you know, that sort of seeps down in also. So it's just a really tacky mess. But anyway, these are the little homeowner's expenses that one learns to live with. All right, I think we have it done properly now.
Good.
So vapor barriers are really important, and people should do that when they're building. They should really pay attention to that.
However, there is a last ditch effort. You can maintain some vapor sealing properties with it, with new paints that are on the market. They're actually paints that you can paint the inside surface of a wall with a paint that has vapor barrier quality. And there are brand names that I probably shouldn't mention, but they, if you get the information from the Cooperative Extension Service, you can write to me at Cooperative Extension Service, and I can send you the information. There are paints that have a vapor barrier rating right on the label, and you paint two coats of this on, and it serves as a, not as good as polyethylene perhaps, but certainly better than none, vapor barrier.
You think the specs are better than on, for example, just a normal oil-based enamel?
Oh, yes.
They definitely
it's because
are.
They're not. The coverage is more complete, and they're designed to be. They're you're supposed to put two layers on first of all,
in opposite directions, or
I don't know if it exactly specifies that or not. But
okay, so it definitely is worth the extra price.
It definitely is, and it's normally just intended to be a base coat. You paint over it with a colored paint. So
I see.
It's just a sealant, essentially base coat.
Okay. I lost a caller earlier because I didn't want to interrupt Rich. So, again, our number is 474-5044. And I'm sorry, whoever I missed, please call back. Okay. Before you go, while I still have you here, if your car does freeze up, if you go to a party and you don't pay attention to going out and starting it, what can be done? You go out, you've left it too long, and it will not turn over. What is the...
Will not turn over. Well, this just sounds like running down the checklist here. I suppose if I were in that position, the first thing I would do is try and find someone with a jumper cable who could get their car started and try and turn mine over. If that didn't work, it's difficult to say what the problem might be. It may be more significant, maybe a problem. If it was dark and cold in the middle of the night, I would probably just call for a tow. But generally speaking, it will get cold and it won't be able to turn over because the oil is too thick. And so, of course, if you could plug it in, that would be a solution. Depends on the situation, obviously.
You have
many options.
Right. You do not recommend the weed burner under the...
Definitely not. Well, if it's controlled and everything goes well, fine. But many people have burned off the plug wires by trying that game when it got too
hot. And burned up their cars.
Yes, and started the fire and whatever.
Now, I only mention that because I know a number of cars that have burned up that way. And so,
yes, it is true.
And it's not just newcomers.
Yep.
It's not just newcomers that do that.
Well, that's a very fast way of getting it done, obviously. It puts a lot of heat in there.
But it's not the recommended method.
Definitely not. It's just, it can be... It's just very dangerous.
Okay. So I really did want to mention that because it's been tried with varied success. Okay, our number again is 474-5044. If you have questions or information that either agrees or conflicts with us or experiences that you'd like to share with our audience of things not to do, I just hate to be the only one who's done everything wrong. I know it's not true. Okay.
I can give you one bad example before I go.
Okay.
And that is allowing your tires and pressure in your tires to get too low. There's a natural ideal gas law that says if the temperature goes down, the combination of pressure and volume will also go down. So if you keep the volume constant, the pressure will go down, or you keep the pressure constant, the volume will go down if the temperature goes down. So if you want to keep your tires inflated at 50 below, you should overinflate them a bit at 20 above.
Uh-huh.
Because when it gets very, very cold, your tires lose pressure. And this was something that I didn't pay enough attention to. I knew it was happening, but I got caught when it got very, very cold very quickly and didn't have a chance to get to a compressor. And I had two flat tires within 2 miles and only one spare and had a very bad morning that continued to deteriorate from there. Abandoned the car, left it running for 2 hours, and it just went home to bed at 10:30 in the morning.
I think
after all was said and done.
We need to keep some tolerance for that. Maybe this is a question for you before you go. Hello, you're on the air.
I'm on the air right now.
Yes.
I don't know how I can be. He's talking to another caller.
No. No.
Sure is.
Oh, is it possible that you are calling the KOAC TV?
I am. I'm calling.
Oh, well, we're on radio.
I see. Who am I talking at on radio?
So we're talking about winterizing cars.
Really?
Yes.
And I thought I'd be talking at the borough mayor here about winterizing cars.
Well, you maybe should.
Specifically during his inspection program.
No, we're talking about winterizing. So I don't really know how to correct this.
Did I dial the wrong number, 5041?
We have 474-5044.
I guess our random number generator at MUS did a number on us.
Are you an MUS employee?
No, I don't think I am. I don't think I would be either.
You're not going to take the responsibility for that.
Yes. Well, I hope you have an interesting program on winterizing. I've already done mine.
Well, you see, there are two types. Those that have finished and those of us who haven't.
Well, you never finished.
Is that right?
Oh,
it's an ongoing thing.
I've been a resident here for a good number of years. I know for sure you're never finished.
It's like once you finish the house construction, the maintenance begins the next day.
That's about the size of it. Yeah, you just wait for the next thing to go wrong. Something always does. Murphy lives here too. You try and you minimize your problems, but you never eliminate them.
I agree.
Yeah.
And Fairbanks weather. Yes, I wish I knew what to tell you to do to try and get through to the mayor, but
well,
I don't.
If I get back to your number again, I'll just.
But okay, well, this is 474-5044, and we're on radio talking about winterizing. Thank you for calling. Goodbye. Okay, I have no idea what's going on. Maybe somebody else could try, and we'll see if it was just a fluke. Here we have another call. I wonder if it's him again. Okay, how frustrating. Okay. Ellen Iote, home economist with Cooperative Extension, is with us in the studio. Is this another call? Okay, we'll take this one. Hello, you're on the air.
I asked if this was a fluke or the show.
This is the show. Well, we don't know. That's up for you to judge.
Well, I wanted to mention, I know I had just the biggest problem last year because when I was getting ready for winterizing, I forgot about summerizing, and I must have moved my wood 5 times last year because I got it out of my way. I'm all ready for winter, and then all of a sudden I hit the melt, and it was right in my way of where I was going to have a summer project. So I think an important part of winterizing is to think about what you got going in the summer so you don't get things all over everywhere.
I think that is a common problem in Fairbanks. I've noticed that myself, and we seem to, of course, we do everything wrong. I mean, Sam's going to kill me, I tell you. It's really not that bad, folks. But you sort of make a judgment about how much winter wood you're going to need for the winter, and you move that amount around and put it on your porch. And, you know, if you miscalculate, then you're stuck with a project of moving it back. And I'm always amazed. I really think that we do a lot of preparation in the fall in terms of really cleaning up the yard. It's amazing how much junk collects underneath the snow. Have you ever noticed that? Has that happened to you? No, Ellen, not to Ellen.
Yes, we couldn't find somebody's home because we knew they had so much junk, and we looked and looked when we drove by, and the winter snow had covered it all up. You know, in the summer it looked quite different.
Yes, I know. We can't keep up with our neighbors. They have helicopters in their yard. I really don't know what the solution is to that. It's just you have to map out your paths for summer and winter and sort of act accordingly. And it does seem like it's an ongoing process. Like our mistaken caller said, it's just there isn't any final time when you feel like everything is just absolutely in the right place and accomplished. But it's probably why we like living here, I suppose.
Right. Okay, well, bye.
Bye. Thank you for calling. Okay, Ellen, you have some things on your agenda, some advice for us on how to dress.
Okay, this is what you asked me to talk about tonight, was dressing for winter. I think probably the first winter that someone spends in Alaska maybe be a really frightening one to them. They've heard these awful tales about how cold it gets. And even if you come from a cold weather climate, you still aren't really prepared. We came from Minnesota, and so one of the first things we did was we sent in an order to Sears for lots of long underwear. And which really wasn't very smart because the office I work in is extremely warm, and where my husband worked was warm too. So we didn't use all this other than when he went on the snow machine, of course, he used that. So I think kind of hold off just a little while. Find out how warm the building is that you're working in. Also evaluate how much time you're going to spend outside. Also, many of the garments that you've had in other areas, other than perhaps if you came from California, is that you can use up here. You maybe will add some heavier boots. You might add some sweaters. You might add some hats and scarves. And then as the winter progresses, then add other items as you need them, and perhaps when they go on sale, because if you're a family of even a couple, it can be extremely costly to completely buy new garments for winter. And so kind of, you know, shop with care and decide just how much you're going to need and then go from there. And I think we've all kind of gone through this. We found things that we really have found worked very, very well, and other garments that we perhaps have spent an awful lot of money with for and then have found that they just have not been very serviceable at all. So I think this is kind of what you need to do. For those parents who have children in school, especially the little ones, you need to make sure that they can completely dress themselves, because a teacher that has 30-plus children in the schoolroom that goes out at least twice for recess a day plus lunch hour cannot be expected to completely dress those children. So whatever garments you select for your children, make sure that the zippers are zipping, that all the buttons are there, that those boots can go on, that the knit hats can go on, that the mittens are there. Attach them to strings or something inside the jacket so that they will have warm hands. And also when they head home, that they're going to be able to be completely dressed. Sometimes we feel when it gets extremely cold that we should wear face masks. Well, this might be fine if you're on a snow machine. But if it's a smaller child, and I say smaller when I think of, say, first, second grade and below that age, is that a face mask many times will gather moisture around the mouth area. And this really isn't a very good type of item for a small child to use. And then also, it can get shifted. In other words, he may not be able to see at all as well. He's crossing the street or trying to look for traffic. So a better thing would be, there's a face mask I've seen that covers the forehead and the chin, and then take a long scarf and wrap that around the head. Also, most parka hoods do not fit snugly enough, and a child can't be expected to pull it down tight. Make sure that he has a knit hat that comes down over the forehead and over the ears that he can put on underneath the parka hood, and I think this is a really good idea. Another area that gets cold are the feet. And kind of when your child says he has cold feet, listen to him and find out why. Maybe you've purchased really expensive boots and you think you've got it all licked, and his feet are still cold and you can't figure out why. If you put several layers of socks on, remember that he needs to wiggle his toes. If the blood is, if the circulation, you know, you don't have circulation, then your feet are going to get cold. And so make sure that he can wiggle his toes inside his boots.
Yeah, that actually is a really important factor in being
right.
warm, having
That's
enough.
Right.
They say constantly that layering is better than one very heavy garment, and also that constriction of hands or feet, even if you have something on that's fairly heavy, in fact causes cold. I once spent a day on a ski slope with a pair of boots that were too tight, and I lost my feet about 10:30 in the morning and never found them until about 9 at night.
That's right. And so remember, cold comes from the bottom up, so when you select boots, consider boots that have a thick inner sole, also a thick sole. Some of the boots that you see on the market are very nice for inside, but really do not work outside at all. They're just not heavy enough. And then also consider what type of footing you have when you walk inside the supermarket. Are you going to go skidding across the floor and land down? You know? So consider something that has some tread to it.
I was reading some of the cooperative extension material today, and I think this is possibly really true. They said price is not always the best indicator of warmth and practicality. That I've especially noticed there's something about Fairbanks teenagers. You know, they seem to just their blood temperature must go up at a certain time of life, because they get around in the most minimal clothing in the most difficult weather. It's just an astonishment to me.
Yeah.
It's one of the best demonstrations I've ever seen of priorities.
Mm-hmm, that's right. That's right.
How I look is more important than how I feel. Therefore, I am warm.
I think the teenage girls especially really are, you know, they just, I think, rather freeze than wear something that's really warm, except maybe when they get a little bit older, then they decide they froze for 2 or 3 years, and then their period in their life comes, and maybe they want to be warm again. The parka then is a little bit longer. It's more than just waist length. And the boots probably will come up a little higher, and and perhaps they might carry some mittens and maybe have a knit hat in their pocket that they might put on.
Absolutely. It's really amazing. Okay. So it really is important that the kids are dressed comfortably, that they can dress themselves. And I think it's important to check to make sure that they are keeping those clothes on, because sometimes when I drive by the I drive down my street on my way to the university, I see kids who have taken some of their outer garments off and sort of flung them into the ditch as they're waiting for the bus. That can be really critical.
That's right. When it's extremely cold, and perhaps it's maybe too warm right now for what they're presently wearing, and maybe that's the reason they're taking their things off. Another thing we need to keep in mind is that we have to make sure these children are seen as they wait for the school bus or walk to school. And so reflective tape is available at the various fabric stores. And, this can be purchased and should be sewn to the parka on the back, on the sleeves. However, someone was commenting the other day, don't make something that is going to attract people, like a pair of eyes or something. You know, you might have some interesting decoration, I think, is fine. Or some mothers incorporate it into braid. If they put braid on the bottom of the parka, then they incorporate the reflective material into that, and that's a really good idea. I was thinking for those children who have paper routes, perhaps reflective tape also should be on the paper bag. And then for those people and you all should, by the way, carry garments in the car, make sure that you have reflective tape on those also, in case you are one of the people who Rich talked about end up having to walk, that your car hasn't started, or perhaps it broke down as you were traveling to and from work.
Yes, I think is really important. I think everybody needs to. This is an appropriate time of year to sort of take stock of your car, and make sure that you have some survival gear. In the cooperative extension material that I read, says to carry in your car at all times mittens, snow pants, a heavy scarf or cap, some really good outdoor boots, and possibly a blanket or sleeping bag, in addition to a flashlight. Because we do have this sort of town atmosphere that we're just going from work to Safeway. Sorry.
A supermarket. There's supermarket. Others, it's Market Basket. There's Foodland. There's a few others.
We're equal opportunity here. At any rate, just going from the store to home to work, and you get this false sense of security that nothing will ever happen. But in fact, if we get a cold snap, half a block can be a very long, long time. And I think, in fact, Fairbanksons are very good about stopping in emergency situations, but perhaps as we get a little more citified, even that's not a given. So we really have to be prepared for emergency stops. And metal breaks. It's more likely to break when it is that cold, and so breakdowns are not uncommon in cars at that time of year. Okay, you have some more things you want to go...
There's a variety of fabrics available, of course, that you can buy, and probably down is still the best on the market. However, it's the most expensive, so there are some other synthetic types of material.
I was going to ask you about that. That's very confusing. You know, they make a lot of claims for some of the new materials, and they're supposed to at least have better water resistance. Now, when it really gets cold in Fairbanks, that's not so much of a factor, because it's unlikely at 40 below that you're going to get wet unless you're overheated. And that is something that we should avoid, is getting overheated when we're outside and sweating. That's a real dangerous...
That's right. And that's why, you know, when you dress your children for school, that you, rather than putting very, very heavy garments on that they cannot take off when they're inside the school building, that they dress in layers. I was just amazed. I was in one school building and how warm it was. And then, you know, you said to your youngsters, well, aren't you going to wear more than just a T-shirt? Well, it's too warm. And in reality, it really was. And so... And I think older children know, you know, how warm a building is, but for second graders, perhaps, you know, their mother wants to make sure that they are really warm, and then perhaps dress them too warm. And then when they go out for recess or lunchtime, then they're going to perspire and then catch cold. Richard told us some funny things that happened to him the very first winter we were here. My daughter was born, and it was 50 below outside, so I figured I really had to wrap this child up very well so that she wouldn't catch cold. Well, it was 50 below outside, but probably close to 85 or 90 inside this apartment. And so I wrapped her up, and she got just red as a beet, you know, and broke out in heat rash. So that was our first winter in Fairbanks.
Timing is everything. I have a friend who has two small children. She said her husband was working up north. She said, I have to dress one and then put her on the porch and tell her stand there and
That's
then
right.
dress and then dress the other one, because to leave the first one in fully dressed for outdoors at 50 below, she gets heat rash or prickly heat or something.
Yeah.
You know, so you sort of put them in order out on the porch for cooling down purposes.
<That's right. laughs> Because you can get really, really warm.
Okay. So there is a confusing array of new products on the market. I think possibly partly out of this real interest in mountain climbing that we've, and maybe perhaps some of the outer space, some of the moon projects, that we've got some of these new materials. But could you tell us about some of them and which are better than others? And
well, like I had indicated, down still is the best. It still has the best insulating quality. It's expensive, and it is washable, machine washable. However, do read the manufacturer's suggestions. And you have to make sure that you completely dry it once it's, it's wet. Otherwise, it will kind of lump up and bunch up, and then it will lose its insulating qualities. And, of course, it can mildew, and you can have some other problems. Then there's a whole list of fiberfill-type products that are on the market. There's a lot of trade names. And I think, Patty, probably the best thing for people to do is give us a call, and we can send them the publication entitled Family Winter Clothing in Interior Alaska. And it lists the different products. It talks about the advantages and the limitations of each, and which ones, you know, perhaps are better. Some that you might think of that are on the market. There's a few that are heavier than down. Down is really quite light in weight, even though it's quite bulky. There's Thinsulite that's very, very thin and has quite good insulating qualities. However, again, not as good as down is.
Okay, could you give us the address where we can send
okay,
for that publication?
Okay, right. It's Cooperative Extension Service, Room 303-1514 Cushman Street, and our phone number is 452-1548, and we're open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, and they can just give us a call, and we can send them that publication.
Okay, we'll give that address again later on in case people need to get pencils and paper.
Okay.
Okay.
Also, for youngsters, don't waste your money buying gloves, because they certainly do not keep their fingers warm. A couple layers of mittens, wool mittens, are ideal. And then if they're going to be playing outside, perhaps some waterproof-type liners to go over the top or outer material. For yourself, you may want the leather gloves for driving, and then carry extra mittens in the car, because, again, if you end up having to walk, those gloves certainly are not going to keep your hands warm.
Mm-hmm. It's the warmth of the fingers that...
Yes, the fingers together that are going to keep your hands warm. And then also in the car, probably carry some wool slacks or some of these pants that zip that are easy to get into, again, in case you have to walk. This is a really good idea. And I think you only have to end up having to walk once, and then you're a believer. And there was one winter when my car would stop probably, well, at least once a week. I would get just about a block from work, and it would stop. Uh-huh. And then an hour later, I'd go back and start it. And it was one of those winters. That car didn't stay with us the second winter, however. And so I knew exactly what I had to carry in the car. I knew exactly what I had to do once the thing stopped.
I love it. Mechanics describe cars as, this is not a winter car. Some cars are just...
Oh, was it.
And some real, apparently, well, I'm not a professional mechanic, obviously, as I've well demonstrated on this program, but some cars that don't look like they'd be particularly good for winter are, in fact, very good winter starters. And so there seems to be a personality in cars. I have friends who won't give up cars because they've always started.
Oh, that's extremely important, because winter really seems to bring out the worst in cars, you know, if it has any.
Or the best.
Or the best, yes, or the best. That's true also.
When I first came up here, someone was describing that car as a parker. Well, I didn't know what that was. It's a car he parked every winter. Okay. So I really cannot stress enough, if we don't accomplish anything in this hour, but to tell you to put those clothing, that extra clothing, in your car. I can really understand why if you just drive from your home to work, why you don't dress up in full winter clothing, but it really should be in the car.
That's right, and in the car, not in the trunk. because if it's in the trunk and your car stops, the clothing is going to be cold, and your car or your trunk, perhaps you can't get into it. It may be frozen shut, and then there you are, and the clothing doesn't do you any good at all. So keep it in the car with you.
And again, just to sum up, you lose heat through your head and through, and the cold comes through for your feet. So
that's
really important, that the best parka in the world, if you've got bare hands, bare head, and inadequate covering on the feet, is really not a good idea.
That's true.
And we are really in, we live in an area which we are in true danger of frostbite.
That's right.
And do you want to say anything about proper treatment of frostbite other than getting to a doctor if that's not possible?
Right. In the one publication, Dressing Children for Cold Weather, it does deal with frostbite somewhat, and so people might want to check that bulletin out and write to it. Treatment of frostbite has changed over the years, and I guess that's the reason I'm not going to comment on it right now, because, you know, at one time you were to do one thing and at one time another. And so we will be updating another publication, double-checking on exactly what's recommended to be done.
Okay, so what I'm not going to mention what I read today because it might not be right.
Well, no, probably not. I would say it's pretty safe to do. You wouldn't have any problems doing it, but I think that I would just as soon not comment right now on that.
Okay, but it is important for people to check out and to know that, that it's a really serious thing. Would you describe the symptoms of frostbite?
Well, yeah, you get white for one thing, or sometimes you get kind of red and almost feel like you're sunburned. But usually people, when it's getting quite bad, your nose gets white, your cheeks get white. One of the things, I think that if you wear earrings, especially the clamp-on kind, you probably should take off when you're outside in the extreme cold, because I saw one individual who frostbit her ears, and it was really bad. They swelled up, they got huge, they peeled, and an extremely sore situation. And so probably be careful with metal earrings.
And also be careful about going out with damp or wet hair.
Yes, right.
It can be really dangerous for those people who are just first time in Fairbanks. Okay, we haven't heard from anybody. I guess you're all talking to the mayor. 474-5044. So you might call us if you've got any last-minute suggestions for us. Okay. Have we covered the clothing to your satisfaction?
I think so. When you purchase a parka or a coat, I think it's a good idea to get one with a hood on, because you can put it up when you need it and then put it back. It's important to have, you know, be warm around your neck and be able to put it up over your head. And not all the coats have them. I noticed some of the long down coats that are extremely popular, I wish they would be featured more with hoods. And I see a lot of them that don't have. And I think that'd be a good idea.
And that sort of cold air gets down your
neck.
That's
right.
And it's really very unpleasant. And legs. Let's just...
Oh, well, one of the things that is fashionable, which I think is really smart, are the leg warmers. My goodness sakes. And so this would be ideal to put on. If you, you know, wear a skirt to work and you have a coat and you have boots, then the leggings certainly would be a good addition to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see sometimes that, well, not just young girls, but also women out there. Everything's, they've got some really heavy clothing everywhere, but this great expanse.
That's right.
Bare leg. And that's...
And you can frostbite that, too.
Okay. I spoke today with a woman named Rebecca Gray. She's an energy use advisor for GVEA, and we haven't really talked too much about housing. It is getting late to do sort of major overhauls of your house if you're just in this year and you didn't deal with the problems that arose last winter, this summer. But there are some things that you still can do. And so I'd like to share some of these ideas with you. She said, check your weather stripping around your doors and your windows. And one of the easiest ways is with a candle flame, and you can just hold it up to the openings around your windows and doors, and if you get a lot of flickering with the candle, you know that you have too much air coming in. Also, they have a quarter test where if you can slip a quarter under your door, it's too much. Well, you'll notice because the ice will start coming up the inside of your door at that point. There are some plug gaskets which can be put on the inside of your wall behind your plug-in plate, and that can be done from the inside of the house, that they recommend, and that keeps your sockets from icing up and keeps a lot of cold air from coming in that way from the outside wall, which is an area that is a problem. And then they also suggest that you be really careful of your heat loss through fireplace. If you don't have a damper, if you have rather than a wood stove, if you don't have a wood stove and you have a fireplace, to make sure that there's a damper on it, because it can be a real steady heat loss during the course of the day if the fire isn't fireplace isn't in use. They highly recommend glass doors on fireplaces if they're not in steady use. Let's see, what else? It's not too late to visqueen the outside of your windows or windows that you don't use a lot to put styrofoam on the outside. They recommend highly an annual furnace checkup. I know that the people who have been doing that have been real busy, as are the people who are winterizing cars, but you know, this is not the most appropriate time to try and get someone out to help you. But certainly that you need to check your filters. The filters on your furnace that you can clean yourself by vacuuming or whatever method is prescribed is an important thing that really alters your efficiency. And that if you get someone out to look at your furnace, you need a draft test and a smoke test, and to check your oil and air filters. And you make sure that the ducts, especially the heating ducts in unused rooms that go by unused rooms or unused areas, are insulated, because it's a major heat loss. We have a call. Hello, you're on the air.
Good evening. I've enjoyed the show so far, and I've noticed that the discussion of clothing has been fairly well constrained to the practical everyday. But one of the things that Alaskans do a lot is get out and exercise. And especially for the people who are new to the idea of cross-country skiing, where they're going to get out and get really warm, and then they're going to stop and they're going to cool off, or if they're going to try to go tromping through the mountains or ice skating out on Blaine Lake or wherever, there might be some real benefit in getting your guests to address sports clothing.
That is a good idea, because it can seem very chilly the first moment you step out on your porch, but in fact, if you get involved with physical activity, your idea of the temperature can change.
Your temperature changes and the body humidity changes. Mm-hmm. You can get quite damp.
And all of the information that I've read has said that is really a danger, getting overheated to become sweaty, and the cool-down effect can be serious. Do you have any special suggestions for sport clothing?
No, I hadn't thought about that. The only information right off the top of my head is my husband has been on the snow machine when it's been 50 below, and he would comment in his heavy snow machine suit that many times he would get extremely warm. So again, the idea of layers. Of course, wearing a heavy snow machine suit is a little bit different than jogging, but again, you can still get quite warm. And the idea that you do dress in layers so that you can take some of the things off. It's not as easy to do that when you're jogging, perhaps. But again, I think a little bit of trial and error, and make sure that when you're getting overheated, perhaps you stop running for a while, and then do try it out, and make sure if you get extremely overheated, perhaps you should head back on home rather than continuing and getting yourself frostbitten.
Do you have any? Does our caller have any special suggestions for appropriate clothing? Have you found any?
Well, I guess the thing that has been best for me is to dress in layers, as you've stressed, and to not be afraid to carry a little weight or carry a backpack. Okay. If you get cool, pull sweaters out, put them on. If you're in a breeze, put on a windbreaker. If you're starting to get into a situation where you're in a city slog and you need to ventilate, take the windbreaker off. But just being always aware of your body temperature and being willing to go ahead and adjust the layers to your temperature and body wetness.
Yeah, that was a good idea. And I didn't know how far you were running or how much you wanted to carry with you, and I was thinking, you know, of the person on the snow machine, where that's not too difficult to do, but yes,
you know,
definitely.
You put on a pair of cross-country skis with a group, and you go out for 5 hours in the mountains or whatever. You know, I guess I really would emphasize actively being aware of it and actively being just always changing your layers.
Yeah, that's true. I mentioned earlier in the program a person had been outside for a while and was supposedly dressed warm enough, but her feet got cold very, very fast. Well, come to find out, she certainly had far too many layers of socks on. And after she took one of the layers of socks off, she warmed up because then her feet weren't so constrained.
That's right. The little air pockets have more place, more volume in that case.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Sometimes you can really, in fact, have too much on. I think I really thank you for your call. I really think the thing that we need all to be aware of is that we are in some sort of critically dangerous situation sometimes without thinking. We can get really too confident that we've got it covered. And that is not to say that we discourage people from going out and being active in the weather, but just as our guest said, that you should be always aware of contingency.
Patty, I want to make one other comment that when it gets cold, cabin fever certainly can set in, and sometimes mothers with small children are afraid to take their children out in the winter. Don't dress them warm enough and go for a walk. Get out every single day. It makes a world of difference. But if you stay in that house for a month on end, you know, you're going to climb the walls and your children are too. And there's no reason why you can't go outside if you're not dressed, you know, warm enough.
I believe that the school children routinely go out until 20 below. Is that correct?
I don't know what the policy is. Yes, but they do go out on a regular basis. That's why, you know, you want to make sure they have all the pieces of garments they need so they can go out.
I hope, if I'm not correct, some school person, some teacher will call me. I would like to plug the Parenting is a Mixed Bag series that is put on by the Resource Center for Parents and Children. They have a couple of programs coming up that speak to this issue. On November 14th, they're going to have a program called Sleigh Bells Ringing, Are You Listening? Preparing for Winter with Kids. Eileen McInnes is going to talk about the kinds of things you can do with your children in the winter, and especially for parents with small children. And often in Fairbanks, women are left to take care of small children and their husbands are, in fact, out of town. This can be really an oppressive situation. Friend of mine said, you don't know what cabin fever is until you have three kids under five and you're doing it alone in a cabin. And I'm sure that's true, but there are a lot of resources in this town, and I hope that people do not lose sight of them. The other thing is, on November 21st, Mary Vedener is going to talk about growing your own playgroup, Fairbanks style, a sort of formula for developing an indoor playgroup where kids can run off some of this excess energy that they might have in a small area, so that parents can get together and form some kind of play group with children in an indoor setting. And also, I'm really not aware of the details, but if it turns out that we get another very cold October 31st, there's always trick-or-treating in the malls. That's a Fairbanks custom. They say it gets very cold on October 31st just out of perversity, I think, when your daughter wants to be a gossamer fairy.
That's right.
You know, it's 30 below. So, all right, I think we're running out of time. I haven't had a chance to sort of pitch you all on participating in this program. I want to sort of subscribe to Andy Warhol's idea that if everybody would take their 15 minutes of fame, it would be a lot easier on all of us. And I would encourage you that this program is only going to be good if my guests continue to be as lively and interesting and informative as they have been for the last couple of weeks. So Fairbanks is a great volunteer town, and I urge you not to be shy, to volunteer and to come in and talk about whatever's interesting to you. I'm sure it will be interesting to me, and I know it will be interesting to the audience. So if I would have 104 people volunteer to do just half of one program, the whole year would be much easier on me and probably very enjoyable for the rest of Fairbanks. So I encourage you to do that. You can reach me through the station, 474-7491. Our engineer and co-producer this evening has been Kathy Smoyer. Carla Tanella is at a conference outside. I thank you very much, Ellen Iote, for joining us. If you have any additional questions for her that you didn't call up this evening, please call her at the Cooperative Extension. Could you give your number quickly?
Yes, 452-1548 or 452-1530.
Good. Okay, I thank you very much for joining us, and I look forward to talking to you next week. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.